Fellow Falcoholics, what is up? Welcome to episode 211 of the Falcoholic Live. I am your host, Kevin Knight, joined by my co-host, Adnan Nikic, at Say Which Way. Adnan, how are we doing tonight?
Doing well. You know, it's week is already halfway over. As my late uncle used to say, when you get to the end of Wednesday, the week's pretty much done. The weekend's right around the corner.
Yeah, we're over the hump. You know, the hump day commercial. We're over that. Now going into the home stretch of the week here. Joining us on this adventure is Will McFadden at Will McFadden on the Twitters. Will, how we doing?
I'm doing well, Kevin. Man, Adnan, I wish I had had the opportunity to party with your uncle. He sounds like a great dude to just hang out with.
Yeah, it's a hell of a thing. Thursday and Friday are basically the new weekends.
There you go.
Why don't you know every day should just be the weekend? Let's just go to that. Like, we don't even need weekdays anymore. Just make them all weekends.
There are no weekdays when you're unemployed.
Well, that's a good point. Very good point. So,
yeah, well, we're taking down society next week.
Employment overrated.
You know, money overrated. That's save it for the financial podcast coming, you know.
Let's be hunter gatherers again.
Hashtag like, personal finance takes.
It's like that one Rick and Morty episode where he devalued their currency from 1 to 0.
Yep, yeah, yep, total anarchy.
Mm-hmm. For money.
Yep.
So wait, what's playing me then?
Oh my gosh. That's a good episode. It shows you how, you know, fragile our society truly is. But
we're off to a rip-roaring start.
We're at a really good start here, guys. I promise there are Falcons takes coming, as you can see from the title. But if you didn't, you know, if you were confused to open the show, I don't blame you. Welcome to the Falcoholic Live. Yeah.
I just saw her viewership go from 50 to 49. There was someone.
Yeah, we lost someone. Yeah, they're like, I don't know about this. but guys, welcome. Thank you all for tuning in. We are going to talk about the Falcons' heroic, you know, nice, whatever, however you want to phrase it, comeback against the Rams. However, the comeback did fall short because the Falcons are 0-2. But at least we saw some nice things towards the end of that game instead of the absolute dumpster fire that was like the first three quarters. And we're going to talk about that game in detail with these guys. We haven't really heard a ton about, the Seahawks yet. That's going to be more for our game preview. So keep an eye on that. Cause like I said, we only have 1 day of practice reports to go off of, but, after that, we're going to get to the all-important question, which is, which 0-2 start is better? I liked Dave's roundtable, so we're going to piggyback off of that. Is the 2022 0-2 start in any way better than the 2021 0-2 start, which, of course, was also very bad? But I think there are reasons to be a little bit more optimistic this year, so we'll get into some of those, I'm sure. But yeah, I haven't heard from either of you guys about the game. I talked about it for about 45 minutes, so I will open the floor to you guys first, Will, as the principal guest tonight. What are your thoughts? Like, did you feel better like at the end of that game than you did, you know, halfway through because of the comeback, or did you still feel pretty disappointed because of the loss?
I still felt pretty disappointed because of the loss. I think I felt better. It all comes down to, right, the culture, the personality of the team, all of that good stuff that is kind of mumbo jumbo until, you know, the moments that it isn't. And I do think that all offseason, having talked about, hey, you know, we're expecting to compete, right? Like, that was the language from the team is, yeah, everybody externally is saying we're rebuilding, but we don't view it that way. We're coming out here to compete. And yeah, we understand where we stand, but like,
new
that's
customers get our best deal.
That's our mission. And we saw that on Sunday. So I felt better from that standpoint, that it made me feel more like, okay, like, that's not bullcrap from the organization. Like, that is generally what I think Arthur Smith's philosophy is. And, you know, the three of us, we were all there. We saw him and spoke to him at the podium. Like, he does seem very genuine in that kind of mindset. So I felt much better about the fight that the team showed. It didn't really mean much to me that the defense, yeah, they got turnovers, but like, that's kind of why they were able to stop the Rams. Let's not forget that they converted that third down that Darren Hall then forced the fumble on. Like, to me, they never really had any answers defensively for the Rams. And I think that's the biggest takeaway. Yeah. And then offensively, they still weren't able to really, I know the game script got away from them, but they didn't establish the run game, or at least they weren't as effective outside of that first drive as they were against New Orleans. So like, they got to clean that stuff up. I still, like everybody, am waiting to see Kyle Pitts in this offense. I think we'll see it this Sunday. So I liked it more from a culture kind of personality of team standpoint, less so about, all right, is this team actually good? And was the first half more of a fluke? No, I think the first half is a little bit more indicative, and that the second half, they got those turnovers and made some big splash plays. Credit to them. It doesn't make me feel a whole lot better.
Yeah. I mean, you like obviously the blocked punt, because, you know, Troy Andersen, that we harped on that all offseason. Like, Troy Andersen might not play on defense a lot, and if he does, you know, might not look great, but special teams, he's going to be great right off the bat. And we saw that already, just completely blew through the line for that block punt, which was a crucial play. Didn't end up, unfortunately, leading to the win, but it was absolutely crucial in getting the Falcons back to a respectable score. You love to see that. He's going to continue to be good there. But yeah, I agree that the play of the defense in this one, I think, was the most concerning, because the offense eventually got it together, but the defense really did not. It was pretty concerning, but I will allow Adnan to get a word in here before I give any more takes, because I've given a lot of takes over the past few days between the film review and the post game show. So Adnan, what are your thoughts on the game? How'd you feel about the comeback in the end? You know, yeah, we'll start with the comeback. That's kind of what we're on.
No, I definitely echo everything Will says, and I know that's a lot more boring when you know it's not a conflict or anything. But no, he's completely correct. It feels great from a culture building standpoint, because that's what you want. You know, the team isn't buying in, clearly isn't buying in to the outside noise. You know, they're not buying into us. They're not buying into the media saying, oh, this is like a 3, 4, 5, 6 win team. I still think it will be, but it's really good. There's a difference, I think, between a loss where the team completely lays down versus a game where they're down 28-3 and then come all the way back and, you know, give a good scare to the defending champions. And, you know, consider all the circumstances. The Falcons were coming off of a highly emotional loss to the Saints. They could have easily, you know, hung their heads down 28-3. They just went on this West Coast trip against a Rams team that had a lot more rest than they did. The Rams played on Thursday night last week against the Bills. The Rams were, you know, looking to bounce back after the Bills pretty much pulled their pants down on opening night on national television. But it's really good to see that the team didn't give up. And, you know, they kept fighting until the end. But Will's also completely correct in that I don't think that the score line is indicative of how good the team. I don't think this team is, you know, only 4 points worse than the Los Angeles Rams. they had the blocked punt, which was, you know, fantastic. I think that was their first blocked punt return for a touchdown since 1990. Is what the Fox broadcast said, which has been a very long time. Troy Andersen wasn't even alive back when the team had a block punt for a touchdown last.
That's true.
I wasn't alive
back then. Yeah, it's wild that it's been that long. I know they've had some blocked punts, but yeah, I guess not one that was returned for a touchdown. So,
And the other play is I'm really, really happy for Darren Hall, who forced that fumble and who recovered it against Cooper Kupp. But yeah, no, that's correct. Like, remember, that was still the Rams converting that big third down, and Darren Hall just having a moment of brilliance where he stripped Cooper Kupp, who is, in my opinion, a top two wide receiver in the NFL right now. And
wow, hot take.
It's scorching. It's between him and Justin Jefferson right now. You know, even a hotter take right there.
Yeah.
But yeah, and you know, he went back, he recovered it. You know, Arthur Blank was happy on the sideline. I'm sure we were all jumping up and down in our living rooms when that happened, because it's like, yeah, well, shit, we may even do this, and then, you know, we didn't do this. But yeah, I'm glad the team had that fight. They went on a 24-3 run in the late third and throughout the fourth quarter. Drake London looked fantastic. Like, he looks as good as advertised 2 games in. I'm pretty sure we'll get to some Kyle Pitts takes. But yeah, Marcus Mariota made his mistakes. Like, I think it's unacceptable to not at the very least give to hold the ball for as long as he did on that last play. You know, I think you need to at least give your guys a chance. And, you know, you still have Aaron Donald lurking in the backfield. Like, you knew you weren't going to make as much time and as you wanted. And also that interception to Jalen Ramsey, I don't know what he was thinking there, just throwing it in, challenging Ramsey with, I think the receiver was a Kadarrell Hodge.
Brian Edwards.
Or yeah. Brian Edwards, which,
I mean, it was like fine coverage. So
well, he threw it way too high. Like, if he Edwards didn't have a chance at it. Yeah.
Right in his lap. I think he was just one of those, I got to trust that my guy's going to beat it. But he didn't really see it coming.
I don't blame Edwards for that at all. I put more of the blame on Mariota. And I thought, you know, he got away from pressure. And, you know, he challenged Jalen Ramsey and he threw it a bit high. And Jalen Ramsey made him pay for it. So, you know, if the Falcons don't make those mistakes, then, you know, maybe they even pull it out and win it. But, you know, other than that, I think Mariota managed the game pretty well. But still, that's a big caveat of two, you know, huge mistakes. Well, the interception more so, because you never know with the Hail Mary. Yeah. But, yeah, it was great to see the team, you know, put a scare in them, put up a good fight. And it makes us feel a lot better. But personally, I think that the team put up that fight because of some individual pieces of brilliance. From Anderson, Lorenzo Carter, who recovered that touchdown, who recovered the pump block for a touchdown, and especially Darren Hall, who gave the offense a chance pretty much single-handedly on that Cooper Kupp reception and fumble. But yeah, it was good to see, but at the end of the day, it still goes down as a loss. I'm not mad at this loss, but it does compound that Saints loss even more.
Yeah.
Because now you're 0-2. I don't think a single 0-2 team made the playoffs last season. We know that it's that dreaded start in NFL history.
Yep.
And, you know, that makes this game this week maybe a September must win if you have hopes for the playoffs.
Which I'm sure they will say that they do. I don't know how serious the belief is that they will make the playoffs, but I'm sure they would like to avoid 0-3 no matter what. Yeah, I mean, I you guys raised a lot of good points. In my film review, I raised a lot of questions with some of the plays. I thought that the Rams really did a good job at beating what Dean Pease was covering, and they did it consistently. They really confused the Falcons defense by lining up Ben Skronik as a fullback, the wide receiver. And they did it really intelligently, in my opinion, because they used Skronik only to block like receivers. So like they weren't asking him to be a fullback and block linebackers. They were like, no, Skronik, run out there and go block like a cornerback as a wide receiver. So them playing a wide receiver at fullback really forced them into like a weird personnel situation. And the Falcons didn't really have a good answer for it. It seemed to confuse their whole defense. You know, they had Cooper Kupp line up in the backfield on one play. And that was the one where he just had that easy touchdown where nobody even covered him out of the backfield. So it just, I think the Rams, you know, Sean McVay is going to do this. Like, he's going to stress out your defense and call some interesting stuff. And I don't think the Falcons handled it well at all. I think they basically got destroyed by it pretty much all game. And like, it certainly helps when you're the Rams and you can just out talent everyone on the offensive side of the ball. There's really not much excuse for the Falcons not getting more pressure, because the Rams were starting two reserve players on their offensive line. And you know, they got the ball out quick, but still the pressure was nowhere near as effective as it was against the Saints. So that was a concern.
Easier, yeah. A lot easier to out-talent the Falcons than it is the Bills, as as we saw on Thursday night.
Yeah, exactly. So it was, go ahead.
I also think that plays into it a little bit. And it was something like Arthur Smith brought up after the game in the post-game press conference that I kind of found interesting, or maybe it was Monday, but it was essentially like a pick your poison type of deal, where when you're going up against an offense that has Cooper Kupp, that has Allen Robinson, that has Tyler Higbee, that has a quarterback like Matthew Stafford, who is, you know, as among veterans, like seasoned guys who have been in this league for a long time, like he's definitely up there. And he knows exactly where to go with the football on any given play. I think that they made the decision, look, we can go out there and try to play some man coverage and try to match up Cooper Kupp with AJ Terrell or try to do some of these things. But if we get burned, and these guys are capable of burning us, it could be six. I really do think, and their play kind of backed this up, that they chose to go heavy zone, yeah. that they chose to, you know, really try to keep everything in front of them, let them like kind of chunk their way down the field and make them put together a long drive. They just can't play zone coverage that poorly, right? Like zone yeah. coverage doesn't mean just giving up completions left and right. And when you see Matthew Stafford, 14 of 16 in the first half, 13 of his first passes are all completions. Like,
yep.
You can't have that. And that is where I think this team, and I will still say, like, I think they're a better man coverage defense than they are zone coverage, even though, you know, Casey Hayward's history is in zone coverage. And even though like some of the players like AJ Terrell, obviously is a long history of zone coverage, but I think they're better in man. I think they should play more man. I think that helps them.
Yeah.
I think that helps them get more pressure on all this stuff. So I don't know how much confusion, like, I don't know if the Rams like just put on a masterclass and out schemed Atlanta's defense. I think part of it was by design to allow them to get those completions underneath. They just need to be a lot better about either getting picks like Michael Walker did when dropping back, or, you know, you got to be much quicker to make these tackles and really make them earn every single yard. And I don't think they did that very well on Sunday.
No, the problem was when you're going to play that much zone, you have to tackle really well. You have to rally and tackle. And the tackling was probably the biggest issue in this game. Just a lot of guys bouncing off. And Cooper Kupp's really good after the catch. I mean, that's really his strength. So that's part of it. But it wasn't just Cooper Kupp that had trouble tackling. It's pretty much everyone. So can't have that. Like, that's the one issue I have with Michael Walker, who I think has looked like good diagnosing plays, good in coverage, had that pick where he really sold the run fit super well and then dropped back. And got that interception. His tackling has been really poor. Like, that's the one thing that I have an issue with, because I think he's the full package otherwise. Like, he's in the right place. He's there to make a play. He's quick to get in the backfield when he's run blitzing or regular blitzing or whatever, and he's in the right place in coverage. But he's just not finishing tackles, and you're not going to play linebacker very long if you can't finish tackles, which is why they're so reliant on Rashawn Evans, especially against the run right now. And, tackling is one thing you absolutely can fix. Like, that's one of the things you can really coach up. It's not necessarily that complicated, but, you know, it needs to happen soon or you're going to have problems playing that much zone. And also, like, Cooper Kupp's going to line up in the slot a lot, and the Falcons currently don't really have, like, a solidified slot player. Like, they've sort of made a point of, like, rotating, like, 50 guys into the slot. Like, Eric Harris played it a bunch. D'Alford played it some, Mike Ford played it some. Like, they don't really have like a slot defender right now. And I wonder if rotating that player constantly is creating a bit of communication chaos back there. I mean, you're always going to rotate guys, like, cause sometimes you're going to play dime, you're going to have an extra guy. So all these guys need to be ready to go, but still there's not really any consistency. And some of that might be the Rams being cheeky with their personnel and, you know, fullback wide receiver stuff. You know, maybe some of these issues get better when Isaiah Oliver comes back. You know, if he can sort of solidify that slot position, that might help a little bit. But yeah, I have a lot more problems with the defense. But like, again, the defense did sort of keep it like if the offense had been able to score at all, it wouldn't have been that big a deal. Like, yes, they gave up 31 points over the course of the game, but the offense, if they were even just scoring a little bit in the first half, like even if they had one touchdown, this would have been, you know, tie game, Falcons leading at the end if they don't miss that field goal. So, like, the offense really needed to pull their weight early in this game, and they did not. So it made the defense look a lot worse when they were just getting nothing on these drives into Rams territory. So, you know, it was sort of a full meltdown.
Well, I mean, like, Arthur Smith talked about it today in his press conference. It's really, like, he said almost the story of this season, the two losses could probably just come down to third downs in the red zone specifically. Like, you marry those two key stats that everybody talks about. It's like the Falcons have not been where they want to be on third down. I think they're kind of middle of like 19th or something on third down in the red zone, kind of the same case. They're 50% conversion in the red zone, but it's like those two key things together and coming away with field goals. The Falcons actually, I think, are ninth in points per game right now, which is good, but that's all because of Younghoe Koo and
a defensive touchdown.
And defense touchdown. Yeah. And special teams. But yeah, it's like they are converting field goals and they're giving up touchdowns because their red zone defense has not been very good. So you're absolutely right. Like that is going to be, I think, a really key on Sunday, because the Seahawks are the second best red zone defense, at least so far. Now, I don't think the Seahawks defense is all that good, but statistically in that area, they've been very good. And I think that is a key thing. We've talked about the offense generally by and large being pretty decent. I mean, that like they, They at least look competent. They're not as explosive as I think we would like them to be, but maybe that changes if they start getting Kyle Pitts a little bit more involved. But really, it's third down and the red zone specifically where they've kind of had their shortcomings. And when you lose two games by five combined points, those are probably a good place to start looking for answers.
Yeah. I think the Rams were held to a field goal one time in this game when they went into the red zone. They had five red zone trips? Stafford had three touchdowns.
And it's all different ways. Like, they can run the ball right up the middle for a touchdown, or, you know, that quick fade to Allen Robinson for the first touchdown of the game. Like, teams are throwing well in the red zone against the Falcons, and they're kind of running it right up the middle when they want to as well.
Yeah, and that was an issue against the Saints as well. Michael Thomas had two red zone touchdowns during that big comeback that they had, where the Falcons, it just felt like when they got down there, it just felt like a matter of when, not if.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, especially on that last drive, I even remember thinking the Saints had, 4 minutes on the clock, and I was thinking to myself, all right, like, I'd rather they just score quick here so then we at least, like, have the ball. But, you know, that ended up burning the Falcons because they didn't convert the two-point conversion. That wasn't even from the Falcons' defense. That was just a terrible play call.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also – some of it's been bad luck, too. Like, you know, like those two Michael Thomas touchdowns. I mean, it's like you couldn't throw it any better from Jameis Winston. It's like literally a perfect pass. Like, Terrell's playing it exactly how we should play it, getting his hand up. And it's just perfect thread the needle pass and terrific catches. So it's like, you know, people are like, oh, Terrell's playing poorly. He's going up against elite wide receivers and elite and really high level quarterback play on those passes he's given up. You know, it's going to happen. Like, it happens to everyone. Like, Jalen Ramsey got his ass kicked in week one, you know, and people were like, oh, does Jalen Ramsey suck? No, Jalen Ramsey doesn't suck. Like, it's just like, corners get beat, the best corners especially, because teams, they're going to be lined up one-on-one a lot. And like, we need Terrell to start like making some of those plays, but he almost had a pick against the Rams in this last game. Like, he was right mm-hmm. there. So like, he's there. I think he's playing fine. It's just like, it's some bad luck there. And just, you're also playing two pretty good offenses. Obviously the Saints didn't play well this week against the Bucks, but the Bucks have a very good defense. The Falcons do not. So could be that too. Yeah, it's tough. Trying to think the other point I was going to make. The run game was quite poor in this one. I thought the blocks were not there at all. I thought the offensive line,
Greg actually, Gaines for the Rams, like, single-handedly ruined one drive.
Yeah. And they were like double teaming him. He was still just like knifing through the line. Like, I didn't think the offensive line played well. I thought the protection calls were missed multiple times. Like, multiple times there were free blitzers getting to Mariota. You know, the Bobby Wagner sack, like, mm-hmm. both Wilkinson and Dahlman just like slid over to the right, and it was just a free path for, like, they were double teaming someone. So like, and like, I just don't know how you miss Bobby Wagner literally standing like in the B gap. Like, he's like, you have to call that protection. So,
you know, I think maybe Jake Matthews even like looks over.
Yeah. And he's like,
he's kind of like, all right, you guys see this, right? And then the ball snapped and he puts like one hand out that way and is like, all right, here we go.
Yeah. You know, Jake Matthews can do no wrong, so I know it wasn't his fault. But, and it honestly, it's not Wilkinson's fault either. It's not his responsibility to decide who he blocks. I mean, he could freelance it, I guess, like, if he disagreed with the call, but usually you don't do that. But I this is probably, and like, the snapping, I think, has been an issue over these first two games as well. Yeah. So, and this,
I mean, the Falcons recovered it, but
yeah, they hit, you know, hit Kyle Pitts. Yeah.
And there was that one play.
That doesn't count as a target yet.
Don't tell that to Arthur Smith. But there was also that play. It wasn't a snap, but remember when Mariota slipped on that fourth down?
Oh, yeah.
It still ended up succeeding. That was like a hell of a play.
But Drake London is coming up wide open in the end zone right behind Parker Hesse, who I think was it Ferks or Hesse?
It was Hesse. It was
Hesse. Drake London's wide open. If Marcus Mariota does not slip there, it's a touchdown. And that drive ended in a field goal. Like, that's the difference in the game. Now, obviously, the Rams probably don't do this. Like, we could just play from there, but it was a great play. it was another moment where going back specifically and rewatching it, I was like,
yeah, it was like,
son of a bitch. Like, yeah, Drake London is wide open right behind him.
Yeah. And like, that's a good segue into talking about Mariota. Go ahead.
One thing I will say I am impressed with the Falcons overall, a positive, is their run defense has for the most part looked pretty good in these first two games. Sure, Henderson had his moments, and you know, he had his plays.
Mostly that one touchdown where every single block, every single Falcons defender got annihilated on the block. But yeah.
Yeah. But on 25 carries combined between Henderson and Akers, they totaled, 91 yards. And that's after the Falcons pretty much shut down Alvin Kamara in week one.
Yeah.
One thing I will say is the Falcons have looked very, very good handling the opposing run game, even though their run game wasn't really as effective this week as we would have hoped for it to be. Algier and Patterson didn't have too many lanes to run through, Algier especially. They combined 71 yards on 20 carries. But, you know, I've been impressed at the very least with that facet of the defense. Now, if only we can get the passing defense up to that level as well, we'll have something cooking.
Yeah, that would be good to get that. And, you know, the run game, they need it to be functional. They are going to rely on that aspect, and it didn't really work against the Rams super well. But, you know, we'll see. Because they did succeed against the Saints, who have just a really good run defense usually. So I think there's a chance that they can get this up and running. It just didn't work out super well this week. But pivoting over to the Mariota discussion, some people are like already calling for Ritter to start, which is ridiculous. Like some people are saying Mariota hasn't done anything wrong, which is also ridiculous. But like what we all understand, I think most of us understand what Mariota is supposed to be. Which is he's supposed to shepherd this offense to 2023 and keep the lights on, keep it running. And, you know, I think he's done better than that. Like, I think he's been better than a game manager, but you can also see that he's limited in where he's going to target. And he doesn't really, he's not a super aggressive thrower. Like, he's generally going to take the easier completion, which is not always a bad thing, but we're not really seeing a lot of contested catches, and notably Mariota outside the numbers has been pretty poor. He's been very good over the middle of the field targeting guys there, but in terms of the edges of the field where you're gonna see guys like Kyle Pitts a lot of times have success, not really a lot of success there. Will, what do you think about Mariota's start? Obviously he's provided a lot with his legs too, which is certainly something. What do you think about his start, and are you calling for Ritter yet, or are you still, you know, bus? Yeah.
It reminds me of there's a Bill Burr skit about basically just like when you're at a family holiday or gathering or whatever, when you talk to somebody, a family member who's like in their 80s or whatever, and they just start saying some like racist stuff or what, and it's kind of like, well, what did you think they thought? Like what, like, why were you, what did you think that they thought? They are just from a different time. So it's like, what did people think that they were getting in Marcus Mariota, and what about what they've gotten surprises them? Because it's exactly what I think I expected to see. Like, this is exactly what I thought we would get in Marcus Mariota. And I think that it's totally fair to, he is a game manager, but that's not a bad thing. I don't understand why game manager kind of gets this weird stigma, because sure, like, you're not elevating everybody around you, but you're also maybe elevating the confines of the, or like, you're elevating the offense by playing within the confines of the offense. And so a game manager manages the game. He kind of knows his limitations, but he knows what the offense is trying to do. And that's what I think Marcus Mariota does really well. And he has the benefit of the legs. So he's just a different type of game manager, but his legs are as important as anything. The Falcons, according to True Media, have the number one offensive successful play rate in the NFL right now. And 61% of their first downs have gone for four or more yards, which is also number one in the NFL. So I think Marcus Mariota plays a huge role in that. So just because it's not Patrick Mahomes rolling out and kind of falling out of bounds and making insane throws, like, I don't even know if that offense would be this or would be that with Patrick Mahomes in it, because like, that's not the style of football that Arthur Smith really is trying to play. And I think it's a complicated style of football. I think that people underestimate just how hard the quarterback position is in this league. I'm trying to get better about understanding offensive play calls and like how they're formatted and formulated and all of that good stuff. And just the sequencing and everything in a playbook. Like I'm just trying to get better and understand that stuff. It's so incredibly complicated. It's so hard. And I think that people are just ready to say, well, like, let's throw the rookie out there and like, see what we've got. He may not be ready for that. You're doing a disservice. And in this kind of quick whole, everybody's ready to move on as soon as like 1 year doesn't go well with somebody. I don't blame the coaching staff for not wanting to put him out there before he's genuinely ready. They would rather take the hit and the like kind of PR media hit than put somebody out there and do them a disservice. I really believe that. So
yeah,
A, Marcus Mariota has not been a problem. B, Desmond Ridder may not be ready. He may be ready. He looked great in the preseason, but that's ultimately not for us to kind of determine. We should trust this organization to do what's right because they have more incentive than anybody else to find out what Desmond Ridder can do out there on the field. And if they're not putting him out there, then we have to trust that there's probably a good reason for that. And oh, by the way, Marcus Mariota is not the problem.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And, you know, I know Mad Tom K in the chat basically saying, you know, keep in mind these are two defenses that are believed to be pretty good in the Rams and the Saints. So, like, that's a tough, when we talked about it before the season, like this is a brutal two game stretch. The Falcons came out of it scoring the ninth most points. Now that does include seven from a special teams touchdown and two from a safety. But like, you know, that's, even if you take that off, that's probably still like top 15 offense against two of the better defenses in the NFL. So like the offense hasn't really been the huge issue here. I'm interested to see what they do against like the Seahawks, who are a pretty bad defense. Like if they can make noise there, then I think we'll feel a lot better.
You know,
go ahead.
Do you know who I blame for us being so spoiled regarding and so impatient right now?
Matt Ryan, that bum.
Matt Ryan. Like, I 100% blame Matt Ryan for that and through no fault of his own. But, you know, think of the last time the Falcons were in this position where, you know, you have a new, a legitimate rookie who you're legitimately expecting to start. Like, none of the players in the none of the other quarterbacks the team brought in the Matt Ryan era was ever going to, were ever going to amount to anything more than backups. You know, no disrespect to Parker Wilson or Dominique Davis or Matt Shaw, but those guys were all brought in to be backups. But remember the last time the Falcons were in this position? It was Matt Ryan coming in week one. First professional pass was a 62-yard touchdown. You know, they absolutely curb-stomped the Lions, went 11-5, which is what nobody expected in the NFL. And Matt Ryan completely changed the way, not only the Falcons, but he and Joe Flacco changed the way the NFL looked at rookie quarterbacks.
Yep.
You know, that became the era up until this year. I think this was the first year since 2008 or since 2007 where there wasn't a single rookie quarterback to start week one.
Yeah.
But in that time, it became a game of, all right, the rookie comes in, we have to fully take advantage of that rookie contract. And, you know, the rookie quarterback has to be good from the start, you know, from the beginning immediately. That's not the way the NFL has operated throughout most of its history. Before Matt Ryan and Joe Flacco tore the league apart in 2008, you know, rookies came and they sat for a year. They sat for two. Aaron Rodgers sat for 2 years behind Brett Favre. And I think that the NFL finally, or teams finally started realizing that, all right, maybe this isn't the way to go. Maybe this isn't sustainable. Maybe when the Chiefs had a lot of success with Patrick Mahomes sitting in his first season behind Alex Smith, I think that was kind of a shake. You're shaking these teams and being like, all right, like we can have success this way. It doesn't have to be immediate dividends. And now I think where it began for Matt Ryan, I think fans are expecting Desmond Ridder to come and to light the world up and to lead the team to 10, 11 wins the same way that Ryan did in 2008. But that's just not feasible. For one, the team around him isn't as good as the team around Matt Ryan in 2008. That was one of the best Falcons offensive lines we've seen in a long, long time. I think they gave up, 18 sacks all season, which was a league low that year. You had Michael Turner, who, you know, was an absolute engine of this offense and who really helped Matt Ryan in his first few seasons. No disrespect to Cordarrelle Patterson or Tyler Allgeier or Damien Williams, but they're not as good as prime 2008 Michael Turner.
However, stat for you, Cordarrelle Patterson, the first player since Michael Turner in 2008 to have 100 plus yards and a touchdown in the season opener for the Falcons.
Hey, well, there you go. Yeah, elite performance by Cordarrelle Patterson in that game. Yeah.
But even beyond LaGuardia White was a Pro Bowler that year. He was coming off a 1,000-yard season. The Falcons just did fans really think that it was a good idea to throw Ridder in against the Saints in week one and then against the defending champions on the road in week two? Like that, I think that would have been just a terrible idea. No matter how good he looked in the preseason, I don't think that the team would have had a better chance to win with Ridder than they would have with Marcus Mariota. And like Will said, you would have been doing him a disservice. And I think the team would be doing him a disservice right now if they inserted him in, you know, too early. Like I've been sticking with my prediction that when this season gets out of hand and when there really isn't expectations for the playoffs and pressure to make the playoffs, I think that's when the team will insert Desmond Ridder to see what he's got. And I think that's the best time to do so because, you know, you want to at the very least take that off of his plate and see how he does, you know, in an NFL setting without that expectation from the fan base of, all right, he needs to be our savior who's going to lead us to the postseason in year one, the way that Matt Ryan was in 2008. Like that doesn't happen. That's such a rare phenomenon. And, you know, I think we'll see what he's got, and hopefully it'll be very good. Hopefully it'll be everything we expected, and I think the coaching staff is expecting to get that criticism of, oh, why didn't you put him in earlier if he does do very well? But yeah, I don't think that they care about that at all, and I think they are legitimately doing what's best for Desmond Ridder. But at the same time, we do still need to see what we have in Desmond Ridder. Especially if the team is at what is at 3-7, 3-8 at some point in this season. And I think we will get that eventually.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Like they don't care. Like that's a good problem to have when people are criticizing you for not putting in the rookie like sooner. Like it's like, oh, Desmond Ridder is so good that like people are mad at you for not playing him sooner. Like I think they would be happy to have that criticism. Just because, I mean, in the spectrum of criticism, that one means that there's good things happening elsewhere. So I would take that every time. But yeah, they're going to wait until Ridder's ready. And they're probably going to wait until they're eliminated from the playoffs. Is that week 10, week 11, week 12, week 13? Like, I don't know. Probably closer to week 10 than week 13, 14. But, you know, it also depends on the rest of the division. Like if the Bucks just run away with it, Falcons could be eliminated pretty quickly. You know, it also depends on the rest of the NFC, right? Like if the rest of the NFC sucks, then there's like, oh, well, you could get in at 7-8, you know, 7-9.
Which I think that'll probably be the case.
It could very well be. You know.
But it may also come down to like, if Desmond Ridder proves that he's ready, maybe the team does it. Like, I mean, it could be, we're all expecting that the only way he gets in there is because the Falcons either are so bad that Marcus Mariota loses his job, or they're just so bad that it makes no more sense to really kind of keep playing Marcus Mariota. But the positive spin here is that maybe just throughout practice, like maybe with the limited reps that he's getting each week, like he's just getting a bigger and bigger piece of the pie that he's really impressing them in the room. Like there's a chance that he just develops and earns the job. Like there, that could also happen as well. It's just, I always like to liken this back to the real world, right? So people can kind of put it into context of like their own lives. It'd be like starting a new job and a month in, it's like, all right, we want you to present this big project to like our executive leadership team. And it's like, you're just probably not ready for that. You probably don't know the 15 little nuances of the intricacies of whatever you're presenting. You probably don't even know all the people on your team yet. You don't know the executive leadership team, that's for sure. It's like, you just need to get this kid to figure out everything that he's doing. He's just out of college. He's 22, 23 years old. I mean, like this is a lot to throw at him. He's lucky that he's got the benefit of Marcus Mariota here to help teach him so that he can learn from Marcus Mariota's mistakes. You can sit in there in the room and watch the coaching staff, watch Dave Ragone, watch TJ Yates, watch whoever is in there and say, look, Marcus, don't do it this way. And that whole time, Desmond Ridder is sitting there and absorbing that as well. So that when, by the time he gets out there, hopefully he's not making those same mistakes. And hopefully he's not, you know, then getting down on himself or whatever, the team or our confidence, what have you. He's already seen somebody else make those mistakes. That's why Marcus Mariota is here. And we need to let him be here for that reason.
Yeah. No, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I agree. Like, I think if they think at any point that Desmond Ridder gives them a better chance of winning a game than Marcus Mariota, then Desmond Ridder will play. Like, if they legitimately think that at any point, then he will just be playing. But when that will happen is really hard to predict because, again, I don't think Marcus Mariota is playing poorly. So it seems more likely that Ritter's path probably has more to do with the rest of the situation. You know, like they're not worried about making the playoffs anymore or something like that. But it could, at some point, those two things might coalesce and hit at the same point. It also might be like, oh, well, then actually Ritter's just looking so good in camp that we have to play him. Or it's like, oh, wow, we're out of it after like six, like 7 weeks because we're 0-7. So we're going to go ahead and put Ridder in even if he's not ready. So it'll be interesting to see when it happens. I think we all believe that it will. But, you know, we'll see. And George is doing a two-part donation. So we're going to give George a second for the second part to come in before I read it. But anything else on this particular game you guys want to touch on before we move on to the big question of the night?
Not really in particular.
I think we've covered it pretty well. But, yeah, we're ready to move on to week three. But
I just like to say that it was a valiant comeback, but nobody comes back from down 28-3.
Yeah, nobody, ever. It's never happened before. Not that I can recall, so. Thanks, Adnan. Thanks for that. So the big question tonight, and Dave Choate, the boss man, did a roundtable about it. I thought that it was a great question, so I'm going to steal his topic. Yeah. It was good. Good question, I agree. The Falcons went 0-2 last year. You guys might remember. They also are 0-2 this year, but is this 0-2 team better than the 2021 version? Now, statistically speaking, the answer is obviously yes. In terms of DVOA, they're just light years better. In terms of point differential, the Falcons were minus 49 in point differential after week two last year. They're minus 5 right now, which is very respectable. In fact, that might be the best point differential of any 0-2 team right now. But small victories, you know. But I am curious, Adnan, I'll go to you first. Do you think this is a better 0-2 start than last year's 0-2 start, or do you think that it's semantics and both teams suck?
Well, 0-2 is 0-2 at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But that's not the question. I think that the team is a lot better, and I think that's what we were expecting this season. That the team would be better than last year, but with a poor record because the schedule is a lot more brutal this season and they're not facing, you know, maybe the worst slate of starting quarterbacks on any team schedule the way that they were last year. But yeah, the team was completely competitive. They looked really, really good. They didn't get blown out in either of the games. I think the team so far has played 4 really good quarters and they played 4 quarters that have been terrible. And I think it's just very, very unlucky, or partially unlucky, for them to be 0-2 and not 1-1 as a result. You know, they played amazing for the first 3 quarters against the Saints, and then they blew it in the 4th quarter. And they were terrible in the first 3 quarters against the Rams. They couldn't quite come all the way back in the 4th quarter. But this team looks like it will be able to compete with a lot of teams. I think that the players are buying into what Arthur Smith and Dean Pease are selling. The players are full of fight. You know, we saw that in the past game against the Rams. And, you know, I think I predicted that this team would probably win 5 games, but it will be a 5-12 season that you can sort of even be proud of, or at least as proud as possible of a 5-win season. Where, you know, they're in games, they're giving it their all, they're fighting, but at the end of the day, they just don't quite have the talent to overcome some of these opponents. And you know, I think that was to be expected, just given the fact that they have, what, how much, $60-75 million in dead cap hit. If you count Deion Jones, is $20 million as well. I know that's not technically a dead cap hit, but it might as well be. So I feel like Fontenot and Arthur Smith haven't really had the opportunity to build this team the way that they would want to, and they should. I think we'll finally get some of that next offseason, and we'll finally be able to evaluate them in next season and in the coming years. But, you know, I definitely think that this team, I think they'll make us proud for the most part. And I like where this project is going, even though I don't like some of Arthur Smith's quotes to the media. I think he's doing a good job of steering the ship in the correct direction. And even if this team loses more games this year than they did last year, I think they can still come away saying that they were a better team. And I think that that's all you can ask for in year two. Because remember, last year they had the worst point difference out of any 7-win team, would have had the worst point difference out of any 6-win team. And, you know, last year they got absolutely destroyed by the Eagles in week one. Like, that was an outright embarrassment. And then in week two, they did fight back a little bit against against the Buccaneers, fighting Tom Brady.
Tom Brady, yeah.
And they ended up getting blown out in that game as well. And they kind of steered the ship in the right direction against a poor schedule moving forward after that. But, you know, so far, nothing to hang your head about against the Rams. Some stuff to hang your head about against the Saints, but at the end of the day, that was still a very, very close, defeat that came down to, you know, a blocked field goal at the very end, albeit a very long field goal. But this team looks like, I would say, not only a better 0-2 team than last year, but maybe even the best 0-2 team in the league so far out of the teams that are winless, based on just the vacuum of the first two games that they played.
Yeah. No, I mean, I agree with you. Like, clearly, statistically, they're better, and you certainly like that they've been competitive in two games. That's sort of where I'm sort of landing. But, Will, your thoughts on that, too. Do you think this iteration of the team is meaningfully better than the 0-2 iteration last year?
I definitely do, because I think it's more in the mold of what the coaching staff actually wants their team to look like. That's been kind of a big theme. I think Mike Rothstein's been kind of following and pulling that thread a little bit so far through the first 2 weeks, is like, Arthur Smith, is this what you want your offense to look like? And he has said, yeah. You know, he's been pretty pleased, I think, with the design of the offense, with the performance of the offense. So, you know, I think that he still wants to hit more of those explosive plays, but that is the biggest difference to me in these two teams. They're two different teams, and it's almost not worth comparing them, but because this team is better than that team, yeah, sure, like, let's compare it, because this squad, is the floor is just better. They're just a more, I think, for a team that has had as many ups and downs as Adnan just alluded to, like, they're weirdly a consistent team, I feel like. And, you know, I don't know how to fully make sense of both of those things being true at the same time, but there is just like a baseline level of competency, I think, certainly on the offensive side of the ball. And then defensively, I don't yet know if we know fully what to make of it, because defense is so reactionary to offenses, and they did just see two very different offensive types of schemes. And so, you know, what we're going to get in Seattle is a little bit more akin to what they just saw with the Rams. So I will be curious to see, is it going to be heavy zone? I have a suspicion that it will, because Geno Smith, you know, likes to check it off short, and they have not had any success doing that. But all across the board, I think on the defense, I like the talent much better than I did last year. I think they're playing at a much higher level. The offensive line is benefiting greatly from this new offensive look, so they are vastly improved. I mean, it feels so long ago that Jalen Mayfield was giving up 6 sacks in the season opener. I think that Elijah Wilkinson has done a really admirable job so far at left guard and handling some pretty tough assignments. Arthur Smith said that he felt this past game was his best, so far since he's seen him in Atlanta, or I guess the best he's looked, period, including training camp against Aaron Donald. So, I mean, the talent may not fully be there to where they're winning, maybe despite some of the deficiencies that we're seeing, but they're kind of minimizing those deficiencies and maximizing the advantages that they do have in really unique and creative ways. And that is keeping them very buoyant in, you know, the competition level against other teams. And I'm curious to see if that ever does go away. What does this team look like? You know, if the offensive line has a bad game, if the receivers start dropping passes when Mariota hits him in the hands, if he starts turning the ball over at a rapid rate, like the dam's going to collapse at some point there, but they're doing a very good job of not killing themselves in those certain areas. And that's allowing them, I think, to make the sum of the individual parts much greater. And I expect that to continue throughout the year. So for that reason, yeah, I think they're far and away better than they were last year at 0-2, because I kind of never knew what to expect from Atlanta last year. This year, I at least go into a game kind of saying, okay, I kind of think that they'll give them a fight. Against Seattle, I think Atlanta should definitely win this game. Spoiler alert. But I just expect them not to make a fool of themselves. And kind of for the last couple of seasons, you know, the fourth quarter of, I guess, week one aside. Wow. But I just don't think they're going to be having too many moments like that this year is what I'll say.
Yeah, I do think that they're better. I think the Seahawks game is going to tell us a lot. You know, if they
will
crap the bed against the Seahawks, you know, lose to one of the other worst teams in the league, then I think, you know, people will quickly abandon any sort of hopes they had for this team this year. If they
you want to talk about a big question. I'm literally in the midst of writing this piece for the Falcoholic, which will go up tomorrow. This good week's plug. Big question. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So to give you guys all a sneak preview, I don't know if I'm allowed to do this, but Dave, you're not on here. So, you know, find me later.
Yeah. Suck it, Dave. Yeah.
it's going to be basically like, can the Falcons take advantage of the birdie opportunity in front of them? And the whole golf analogy, it's like not every single hole is going to be a scorable hole, but this one is for the Falcons. This is the Seahawks. You guys are in the same level of competition. A lot of people consider you to be pretty much equivalent teams at this point. You've played well against two teams considered superior. Can you absolutely not just beat a team that is your, like, but can you lay it on them? Can you be the best of the bad teams and by a wide margin? And we're going to get that answer on Sunday, but there you go. I'm plugging a piece for tomorrow. So read that if you feel inclined.
Yeah. Great work. Great work on the plug there. Definitely check out that piece and the site, thefalcoholic.com, guys. Yes. Good time for me to plug everything else. Please like and subscribe if you haven't done so already. Click that bell button to get notifications when we go live. Appreciate everyone for hanging out with us tonight. You can also support us on Patreon if you're so inclined, patreon.com/falcoholiclive. Early access to all the podcast versions of the episode for those of you listening to the audio. It should be up the night before most times on Patreon before they go up on the podcast platforms in the morning. For those of you that work overnight or that just like to have stuff as early as possible, I know I do with some of my pods. Yeah, guys, really appreciate you. Thank you. Speaking of donations, George Costanza with his $2, $3 donations. Thank you, George. It was like a longer thought, so I'm going to read out his whole thought here for us to break down. He says, using my logical fan brain, I understand that patience is needed with this coaching staff and that we are building something for the future and that we also need to give them the benefit of the doubt and trust the process. However, the fact is this coaching staff is proving to be inept at utilizing the talents of Kyle Pitts. Not sure why they can't scheme to get Kyle Pitts more targets. Something has to change. Otherwise, why did we take him fourth overall? So who wants to tackle the Pitts discussion? This is for my, like, I'm going to make this meme. It's just like the, you know, the two like arms, you know, giving a big, you know, handshake. And it's like one arm is like fantasy football players and the other arm is Falcons fans. And in the middle, it's, you know, getting Kyle Pitts more targets. So like, we all want this to happen. Why isn't it happening, guys? Somebody tell me why. Anybody. I don't care. I don't care who. Do you want me to say? You know.
I would like to say that I wouldn't be completely shocked if it's revealed that George is Kyle Pitts' agent, just given how...
might be.
Just given from the very beginning, from the draft process. George, we love you. I always make the joke, because of George, nobody covered Kyle Pitts more than this show did throughout that entire draft process. Yep. But yeah, honestly, like, Kyle Pitts, has looked good in the other facets of the game.
Yeah, he's been like a good blocker, which is nice.
He's been a good blocker. he drew that pass interference penalty, but I agree that it seems inexplicable that I don't know why Kyle Pitts only got what, 3 targets last game. Like, all right, at least in the first game he was tied for the team lead with 7 targets.
Yeah.
Like that I can accept. It just wasn't happening. But you took Kyle Pitts as the highest drafted tight end of all time. He's your best player, you know. I'd say the best player on this offense, without much of a doubt. And you know, I think he needs more than 3 targets. Like, I get it. He's getting added attention. He's teams are double teaming him. But shit, teams are double teaming Cooper Kupp too for the Rams, and they're scheming him open. Like, he had 11 catches this past game. You saw what he did against the Bills. Teams are double and triple teaming Justin Jefferson down in Minnesota. Like, you have to, especially as an offensive coach, you have to scheme your weapon open. And you know, I don't think we've seen much of that. I think Kyle Pitts needs his own set packages as well, where you know he is the first read. But hopefully we'll see some of that based on Arthur Smith's press conference or his interview today. It sounds like it sounds a lot different from his comments on Sunday about this not being fantasy football, and you know, we're gonna go out there and do what it takes to win, but we haven't really done much winning these first couple games, so you know, let's try something different and get the ball in Kyle's hands, and you know, maybe we win that way. But yeah, I get it. Like, Marcus Mariota isn't someone that's going to be taking those deep shots, and Drake London has looked so good in the middle of the field, like through those first 2 games. Like, he has looked well beyond his years, but I feel like we can still have Drake London thriving while also having Kyle Pitts thriving as well. Like, I refuse to believe that this is only a one or the other. You know, type system, especially when these two guys are clearly by far your best weapons. And I'm not saying always just like force the ball to Kyle Pitts the way that, you know, Matt Ryan sometimes used to force it to Julio Jones in that Steve Sarkisian year, but make something, like make a pick play, make some pick plays for him, you know, throw him a tight end screen, do something to get the ball into your playmaker's hands.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. It's like, right now they're sort of lining up Kyle Pitts and saying, go beat somebody. And like, that's fine. That's what you're going to do on most plays with most of your guys. But like, he's good enough that like, you like, just get him opportunities. Like, we like, find a way to get him the ball. And I think part of it is Marcus Mariota's style, right? Like, they're having Kyle Pitts go deep a lot. They're having Kyle Pitts, you know, run these more like lower percentage routes. And I think Mariota's style isn't really to target those routes frequently. I think he's more likely to take the check downs and take the intermediate stuff as opposed to the deep opportunities. We have seen him throw a few deep stuff, and like on that one that Pitts was, you know, drawing the interference on, but that's not really his style. So I feel like part of the reason he's getting fewer targets is because those high value, low percentage routes, Mariota just doesn't prefer to throw those. He prefers the intermediate to short stuff. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's not really emphasizing Kyle Pitts, who has basically been a deep threat for this offense, which I think is also an indictment of Arthur Smith, because Kyle Pitts can do so much more for you than just be a deep threat. They haven't really utilized him on like much short stuff or in-breaking stuff. Like, Kyle Pitts could be just as good as London or, you know, some of these other guys on like slants and stuff like that. Like, he's a huge body with a huge catch radius. You know, you can target him in lots of areas, but we're not really seeing any easy looks schemed up for Kyle Pitts. Like, we've seen more of that for Drake London, and right now it seems like the offense is sort of content to just pepper Drake London with targets and be like, okay, Kyle Pitts is getting all the attention, we're just gonna target Drake London. And like, to Drake London's credit, he's like making defenses pay, but like, Kyle Pitts still needs to be targeted. Like, you could Like, is he really just going to be a decoy for you most of the time? Like, I feel like we have to do better than that, Kyle Pitts. But, yeah.
I don't know if he's just going to only be a decoy. And no. Again, I really expect...
That's unfair to say. Like, he's not just a decoy. Like that.
Right, because, like, he is still adding value in the certain ways that he is. But there were at least a handful of plays that I saw going back and looking at it where... You know, Kyle Pitts was running some relatively short things. Like, there were a handful of quick outs. It's just that there was also a quick... It was kind of like the mirror patterns on both sides, and Marcus Mariota took the snap and looked in Drake London's direction and in Cordarrelle Patterson's direction, and he's just not looking kind of where Kyle Pitts is. There are also a couple of, you know, all the receivers were running some variation of a button hook or a curl or something, and Kyle Pitts ran it to kind of the curl flat zone in the middle of the field, and who's there? Bobby Wagner. It's like the looks are there, and I do think that they are incorporating him as a route runner, you know, to the level that they've wanted to the last couple of games. But to your point, they're not like scheming him up. It seems like he is just one route among three or four on any given play. And it's not like, you know, when the Bills are running a play, like Stephon Diggs is usually going to be their first read. When the Vikings are running a play, Justin Jefferson's going to be their first read. Cooper Kupp, all these great players, and Kyle Pitts should be among them. He should be the first read. And yes, if you want to allow a defense to take him away, or you want to say like, well, the defense is dictating where the ball's going, I would counter with how many times did we watch Derrick Henry run into 9-man boxes in Tennessee? You know, like you have a history of going to the well that is your best well over and over and over and over again. So that is why I do still say it's a long season. I think that this is a little bit of, in the first game, I think that it was so much hype and expectation for Kyle Pitts that they were actually smart to not use him at all. Like, I kind of think that that caught the Saints by surprise a lot in the first half and had a, you know, a good deal of success for Atlanta. This week, again, when you're losing two games by a combined 5 points, maybe your best player could help you. You know, maybe he could be the difference there. And that is where I think this particular week, they really could have benefited from Kyle Pitts a bit more. Drake London had a great game. I think Kadarius Hodge had a great game. Olamide Zaccheaus got a touchdown. So it's like they're getting contribution from the other guys. So maybe if Kyle Pitts is truly drawing that attention, then the other guys are at least benefiting from it. It's just that going back and watching it, I didn't really see four guys just following Kyle Pitts around like they're the Secret Service. You know, it was individual matchups at times. It was against zone defense at times. It's more, I think, a combination of where the ball's intended to go and where Marcus Mariota is deciding that the ball is going. So I don't know if the coaching staff, they are certainly using him in pass protection more in some of these longer two-man, long developing routes to really sell that play action run. However, I don't think that they totally didn't use Kyle Pitts at all. On no. Sunday, it was more Marcus Mariota and where he decided to go with the ball. But again, that's why I say it's a long season. Let's get a 4-game sample size before. Now I have him on my fantasy team too. So I get it, guys. If you've lost two games because of Kyle Pitts, you're probably not feeling great right now. And you're probably a little bit pissed. That's just a separate conversation than how the Falcons are choosing to use him 1 week. Again, I think they purposefully hit him a little bit. The second week, I think it was another issue. It's just in back-to-back games, and they're the only two games that we have. Now it seems like a crisis. I expect that to not be the case moving forward.
Yeah, and the Falcons have also gone up against two teams that have really good safety play, you know, with yes. The Saints and the Rams having, you know, two of the best safety groups in the NFL, even without Marcus Williams.
The, Saints. Dude, the Rams safeties are awesome.
Yeah, they're elite. So, like, those are the type of guys that are going to really limit Kyle Pitts, especially deep. You know, they're going to make sure that he's covered up and make it. And I Mariota, I think, to his credit and to his detriment, like, he's not going to chuck it up into those tight windows downfield. Like, that's just not really his style, because I think he doesn't want to get the turnover, and he doesn't. And it's like, he's still new to this offense. I don't think he necessarily trusts himself to place that ball where it's going to be a touchdown for Kyle Pitts and not a pick. Like, I think that's why I think he's leaning more towards the short to intermediate stuff. That could change as the season goes on and these guys get more comfortable. You know, everyone's like, oh, well, McVay's getting Kupp the ball a million times. It's like, well, yeah, but like Stafford and Kupp have played together for over a season now. Like, they clearly have that chemistry. And like McVay is just really good at getting Cup as a slot receiver. He's really good at getting Cup lined up against the third corner or the linebacker. And like, Pitts should play more in the slot. Like they've played him a lot out wide and they played him a lot as a tight end. I don't know why they don't use him more in the slot. You know, I think Kyle Pitts against the slot corner is just a huge mismatch most of the time. There's just not a lot of slot corners that are going to be able to match up with his size, but this is the complaint, right? It's like there, you can line up Kyle Pitts literally anywhere on offense. And we're just seeing him lined up outside as the number one receiver most of the time. And it's like, sure, he's good enough to play there, but is that an advantageous place for him to play? Like, I don't know.
Put him in the slot. Shit. Like I'm convinced that if Sean McVay had Kyle Pitts, he'd line him up in the backfield a couple times.
Yeah, why not? Like, we're getting schemed up plays to Parker Hesse before we get something for Kyle Pitts. No, not meant as Parker Hesse slander, but, like, you know, just, like, we're drawing up stuff for, like, the fullback and Parker Hesse, and, like, where's the Kyle Pitts play? Like, can they we get something Parker drawn Hesse, up for him? Dude. They love, they're, it's starting to be a problem because... It's like we're seeing more Parker Hesse packages than Kyle Pitts. So
who was the guy that Dirk Cutter couldn't get enough of, the tight end?
Oh, God.
It was Tyson Brailo for a couple of plays, actually, at one
point. Austin Hooper. We should have brought Austin Hooper back. I miss him.
Yeah, but, was it second stint Dirk or was it first stint?
Second stint Dirk. It was.
I mean, it wasn't Luke. No, Luke Stalker wasn't.
Maybe it was Luke Stalker.
No, maybe it wasn't even Cutter. It was.
Was it Levine Toilolo and Kyle?
No, love me some Toilolo. Yeah.
Wasn't Levine,
no, no Toilolo slander allowed.
I'd never talk about Levine Toilolo.
Eric Saubert having a career renaissance in Denver.
It wasn't even Dirk Cutter. It was guy. What was it? Lee Smith last year, whom we were.
Oh
just
yeah, like, yeah. Lee, oh, Lee yeah. Smith targets. Yeah.
I don't
know. No Lee Smith slander either. Yeah.
But there was some blocking tight end. I'm convinced that it was during the Dirk Cutter era.
Where Bear Pascoe. Yeah.
Yeah. He was
the legend who always gets like 20 hits every single week, every single day. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say the highest grossing like article, you know,
the Bear Pascoe signing. Yep.
Yeah. On Falco. I think we're still getting like a few a day.
Yeah. 20. Like 20 a day. Everybody's into Bear Pascoe.
Probably Bear Pascoe, just like going back and clicking on it over and over again. But yeah, no, maybe it was Tyson Brailo, to be honest. But we were scheming up like for Tyson Brailo at one point. But yeah, like use your weapons. I appreciate that Kyle Pitts is becoming a better blocker. He's not here to be a blocker. You didn't take him fourth overall to be a blocker. You know, you didn't pass up on the quarterback prop and on Michael Parsons to bring in a blocking tight end. Like I have expectations of Kyle Pitts to take over that mantle that Travis Kelce has as the best tight end in the NFL relatively soon even. And, you know, I feel like he needs to be put in position to do that by the coaching staff. And, you know, use your playmakers, get the ball into the hands of your best players. That's what the Bills are doing with Stephon Diggs. That's what the Rams are doing with Cooper Kupp. It's what the Chiefs are doing with Kelce. It doesn't matter. The Chiefs wide receivers aren't really that scary this season. They're still getting the ball in Travis Kelce's hands, despite the fact that defenses are focusing more on him.
Yeah, because the wide receivers aren't anything to write home about now. So,
you know what I saw the Raiders do this past week against the Cardinals? It was on, I think, first and goal. They had Darren Waller lined up in the formation, and then they had him motion out as the only wide receiver on the left side, one-on-one. And then they threw it up to him on a fade route, and he caught it for a touchdown. I know because I went up against him in fantasy football and I was watching that play happen live. So that was very infuriating to me. But basically, like, get the ball into your playmaker's hands is the moral of the story. Yeah. Like, there should be no excuses for that.
Yeah. We got to find a way to get Kyle Pitts involved. Like,
it's Kyle Pitts. Get him the ball.
Yeah. It really shouldn't be this complicated, you know? It really shouldn't be this complicated. But yeah, anything else you guys want to add before we wrap up this episode 211?
Oh, 211 already, huh?
I know, we're just flying through the 200s already.
We'll be a 500 in no time.
Yep. It doesn't seem like the Falcons will be at 500 anytime soon, but you know, we'll get to 500 episodes maybe before.
They haven't been since I've been writing for the site.
No, they were 500 a couple times last year.
Yeah, they were 500.
They just didn't get a winning. They haven't had a winning record since you got here, so that's, I blame Adnan for that.
Not even for a day. Like, not even for one single day have I been able to enjoy the Falcons having more wins than losses as a Falcoholic writer.
Yep.
Should have traded you.
It's all Adnan's fault. Yep.
It would have gotten much for me, though, in fairness.
Yeah, that unfortunately. But yeah, at least we're not Nathaniel Hackett. Like, we don't have Nathaniel Hackett as our head coach. I think Broncos fans are already plotting rebellion there. Oh, so
if you thought I was, like, upset after that week one, like, can you imagine if Arthur Smith pulled out Nathaniel Hackett shit to line up a 64-yard field goal for Young Weku? Like, despite...
I'd understand it, and I would congratulate him for the right decision. Young Weku can do no wrong.
Well, yeah, you know, they didn't have Young Weku, though, so that's why.
Except for missed that field goal.
Dude, and the Seahawks, like, did not look good last week at all, and the Broncos lost to that team. Like,
the Broncos didn't look good either. They barely...
I know, that's what I'm saying. They're in rough shape.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were getting booed. Like, that was their home opener. They were getting booed, like, throughout that game. Yeah, Nathaniel Hackett kind of looks in over his head.
Are you saying he's a hack? Yeah.
Easiest fruit there was, like, he can't hack it.
You're right. Wow. That's even worse. That's even more embarrassing on my part. Thank you, Will, for saving us with that. At least you got the layup. I just, like, put the ball in. It just went right off the backboard, and I think you picked it up.
I think making Nathaniel Hackett name references is our cue that we've been going on.
Yeah, we've been going on too long. All right, so
for sure. Started thanks, with guys. Rick and Morty, ended with Nathaniel Hackett.
Yep, he can't hack it. So yep. Good time. Good time to wrap the show here. First of all, thanks to our guest Will McFadden. He is at Will McFadden on the Twitter. Host of the Believe in Falcons podcast. Will, anything else you'd like to plug?
Just be on the lookout for this week's big question coming out, I guess, tomorrow, and then, you know, normal weekly cadence, got three up, three down Mondays after the games, and takeaways right after the game. So there we go. That's it.
Excellent. Excellent. Definitely check that stuff out. Also with us tonight, Adnan Ikic at Say Which Way. Adnan, anything you're working on you'd like to plug?
Series history is going to go, I think, on Saturday. What if the Falcons win or lose is on Sunday before the game. And then I have Fantasy Stud and Dud going every Monday afterwards, so check that out.
Excellent Yeah, guys, I am Kevin Knight at Falcoholic Kevin. You can check out I'm doing our picks posts, so you can check out all of our Falcoholic picks over the next couple days. I'll have Thursday night and then our regular picks. I've got five questions with the Seahawks blog field goals coming up soon. Got the game preview that will be coming out on Friday. I'm going to be joined since Alan Sturck is on vacation this week, I'm going to be joined actually by Seahawks linebacker Lofa Tatupu to preview the Seahawks game. So,
and no offense to Alan, but that's a much bigger
a ditch. Alan was gone. It's like, all right, Alan, I'm replacing you with a player. Sorry, bro. You know, that's how. No, thanks to Lofa for reaching out about that. I'm excited for that.
Wait,
he did. Well, his representation, you know.
Oh, shit. We have players reaching out to us now.
I know, yeah. Yeah, and I have, like, well, it's not a sponsorship or anything of the sort, but I you know, do have something, you know, potentially cool to announce or to at least talk about on the show probably soon. It's, you know, that's just like a fun thing. So, you know, we'll see when that arrives.
Damn.
But it's beer related. If you guys probably saw it on the Discord, if you were.
That's a great tease right there.
Yeah, tease for some beer related fun stuff.
Kevin, are you buying me beers?
I'm not buying you beers. I'm having beers bought for me, you know, so that is.
And then sharing them.
Bought and shipped. Yeah, you know.
Much less exciting.
Yeah, I think Adnan's less interested in that, which is totally fair to Adnan. So.
But players are reaching. We don't even need Evan anymore. So I'm kidding.
Yep, we just cut him out entirely now. So, no, shout out to Evan. All right, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. Like I said, like and subscribe if you haven't done so already. We really appreciate you guys helping us out there. Leave a comment if you're so inclined. You can also check out the Patreon, patreon.com/FalcoholicLive. Interested in supporting the show on that basis. Yeah, guys, we will see you. Friday will be when the game preview launches. And then, of course, Sunday after the game for the post-game show. Until then, guys, have a great night. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time here on the Falcoholic Live. Have a great night, folks.